I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Students will be returning to school in-person learning on Wednesday, January 5th, 2022.
From education to examination and from isolation to inoculation, they are the province's pandemic pivots set to affect millions of Ontarians. The latest shift in strategy in the face of a virus running rampant and showing no sign of slowing. Tightening access to testing, loosening rules for those who are sick, and keeping kids out of class a little longer. The government's guidance and rapidly changing response. Good evening. These modifications made to slow the fast-spreading Omicron variant. Ontario's top doctor says the goal is to protect those who are most vulnerable. And here are some of what's being done. The return to school is being delayed from Monday to Wednesday, January 5th. There are significant adjustments when it comes to both COVID-19 testing protocols and isolation lengths. A further crackdown on capacity is set for larger indoor settings like arenas. And as millions seek their third shot, many residents in long-term care will now be offered their fourth vaccine dose. And there's plenty to digest from these revisions and what they mean for our collective next steps in the battle against COVID-19. We begin our coverage with CTV's Sean Lethong. Sean, a lot to unpack.
There certainly is, Nathan, and the reason for these changes, according to Dr. Kieran Moore, is that Omicron is just far more contagious than anyone had expected. But at the same time, a recent study out of Ontario suggests that Omicron may be 50% less virulent than Delta. So because of that, they're shifting their focus from case counts to protecting hospitals. In a flurry of changes this afternoon, Ontario's Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Kieran Moore, announced several shifts in the province's approach to COVID-19.
I hope Ontarians will understand we have to shift, we have to pivot.
Those changes? The return to school is delayed. New isolation requirements for those who are exposed, new testing criteria, capacity limits for indoor public events, and a fourth dose for those in congregate settings. Dr. Moore says the changes are in response to sky-high case counts.
I think Ontarians can accept this virus is spreading so quickly with the 30 to 40% positivity, with 13,807 positives today, that we have widespread activity.
First, schools in Ontario will now return on Wednesday, January 5th.
This will provide our schools with extra time to begin to put in place additional health and safety measures.
Second, starting tomorrow, free PCR testing will only be offered for high-risk individuals with symptoms. Those who test positive using a rapid test no longer require a PCR test confirmation.
If you have symptoms of COVID-19 and are not eligible for a PCR test and do not have access to a rapid antigen test, you should assume that you have COVID-19 and isolate according to our revised guidelines.
This means that daily case counts will no longer be as accurate as previous. Dr. Moore says with a 30% positivity rate, the province just doesn't have the capacity to test for Omicron.
This is a finite capacity. I don't think anywhere in the world expected the transmissibility of Omicron.
If you are sick, time spent in isolation has been altered. For the fully vaccinated, down to 5 days. Those who are non-vaccinated, partially vaccinated, or immunocompromised, 10 days.
If you have been exposed to someone who has tested positive for COVID-19, are fully vaccinated, have no symptoms, and don't live with a positive case, you are advised to continue to monitor for symptoms.
And for those who are living in long-term care, more protection is being offered.
Effective immediately, residents of long-term care homes, retirement homes, elder care lodges, and older adults living in other congregate settings will be eligible for a fourth dose of an mRNA vaccine if at least 3 months have passed since their third dose.
Finally, indoor public gathering limits like sporting events or concerts will be slashed significantly to 50% and a maximum of 1,000 people. And on that last note, the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment released a statement just moments ago because both the Leafs and the Raptors are set to play this weekend. They said they will not be allowing any general admission tickets, but they will be having those 1,000 tickets per season ticket holders. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. When it comes to the numbers, it's another record-setting day for new COVID-19 cases in this province. Public Health Ontario reporting 13,807 new cases in its most recent update. Although experts have been clear, that's an underestimate because of the limits with PCR testing availability and capacity. There are currently 200 COVID-19 patients in intensive care units, an increase of 10 from yesterday. More than 67,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, but more than 96,000 remain under investigation. The positivity rate is spiking once again, now at 30.5%. Comparing some of those figures to 1 week ago, again, there are 200 COVID-19 patients in Ontario ICUs today. On December 23rd, that number was 169. The province says there are at least 965 COVID-related hospitalizations today. 1 week ago, there were 440. For students in Ontario, it's an extended winter break, but they will return to the classroom. But there's a lot that needs to be done between now and Wednesday, and how families are feeling. CTV's Mike Walker is live with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, the vast majority of parents we've been speaking with today are relieved that in-person learning will continue despite being pushed back by 2 days. However, there are some concerns given the record-setting case counts we're seeing. With just 4 days left in the winter break, parents and students finally have clarity. In-person learning will continue, but it's delayed until January 5th.
I certainly think, you know, the kids need to get back into school as soon as possible. So, you know, compared to other provinces, Wednesday's not bad.
When you can go see a Leafs game and you can go do this stuff, we got to get our kids in school. They need the social, they need, you know, there's a lot of kids who need the support.
Most students were supposed to return to class on Monday. The province says the extra 2 days will allow schools more time to prepare in the wake of the dominant Omicron variant, adding more measures to help slow the spread of the virus, including 3,000 additional HEPA filters and 95 masks will be supplied for staff, as well as 3-ply cloth masks will be offered to students, and screening will be more rigorous.
We think it's very sensitive to the symptoms of Omicron. And would best protect the classroom.
Ontario's science table has said closing schools should be a last resort. Physicians have been calling for the return to in-person learning.
I think that the overall benefits of our children being in schools far outweigh the risks associated with COVID-19. And I think it's great that we added a few more tools.
As parents lined up at this pop-up clinic to get their children their second dose of the vaccine, there is relief.
Our school is a smaller school, so it's got a very small cohort. So for me, I'm more comfortable.
But also some concern with COVID-19 cases soaring to nearly 14,000 today.
Mostly we're worried about staff shortages and, everyone's getting sick.
Before Christmas, we were seeing schools with outbreaks, and I'm sure we're going to see more schools going to outbreaks. But hopefully, you know, as the kids get their second doses, that's going to help by the end of January. I would have liked maybe seen them actually be out for 2 weeks.
Educators and advocates are concerned the added measures fall short.
We have been going through this pandemic now for 2 years. This government needs to have had this stuff in place. We're always responding. It's going to take some time to get those HEPA filters delivered, installed.
Critics have slammed the Ford government for not releasing a plan sooner.
I don't know how parents can think that things would have been unsafe on Monday, but they're going to be much safer by Wednesday. So what that shows us is that Doug Ford just didn't get his act together in time.
For many parents, it's a short delay they've been bracing for.
2 days is 2 days. We've been dealing with uncertainty for 2 years.
Now curious how the return to school will unfold in the face of Omicron. The province also announced today that low-contact indoor sports will only be allowed to resume along with safe extracurricular activities. School boards across the GTA say parents can expect an update in their email on the return to school next week. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. Across the province, 87% of eligible people age 5 and older have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And 81.3% of eligible people are deemed fully vaccinated. In Ontario, that's still considered two doses. 4,037 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 643,000 over the course of the pandemic. 8 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 10,179 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario. Tonight's regional breakdown includes more than 3,400 new cases in the city of Toronto and 1,400 in Peel. York Region has more than 1,200 new cases, with 939 in Hamilton and 732 in Halton. There are 538 new cases in Durham Region and 318 in Niagara. Again, lots to unpack from today's provincial announcement, and our online team is staying on top of every angle. Visit ctvnewstoronto.ca for complete coverage. Fourth doses aside, new rules are also taking effect in Ontario's long-term care homes, banning access to general visitors.
In the places hit hardest by the pandemic, new restrictions are now limiting access. Effective today, in long-term care homes, there will be no general visitors. Residents cannot leave on a day pass, but designated caregivers can enter.
I mean, it's upsetting. They were locked down last Christmas at this exact same time, and that was hard enough. Now they're having, you know, they have to relive this trauma yet again because of improper planning at the provincial level to really safeguard these homes.
It's just every day there seems to be something coming up that there's going to be another restriction or other things that are going to make it more difficult to go visit my dad or other people to visit their loved ones. And, you know, but it's just such a lonely place and they'd be so confused.
In a press release, Ontario's Minister of Long-Term Care, Rod Phillips, says, "I understand that these new temporary measures will impact residents' ability to have close contact with many of their friends and family members. We must remain vigilant against the Omicron variant to protect long-term care residents and staff."
It's only going to be a short term, but we're not really certain. I think it's important that we just go by what the medical professionals are saying at this point and just try to abide by it. And it's going to be difficult, but we've been through harder times than this.
Long-term care advocate Vivian Stamatopoulos says the province could and should have taken steps to prevent these measures from happening.
Things like mandating N95 use at all times among the staff and the visitors. Why are we still using surgical masks in long-term care, except if you're caring for a COVID-positive resident? It doesn't make any sense.
Stamatopoulos says less than half of staff members in long-term care have their booster shot, while families who are vaccinated are locked out.
If you have family members who are triple vaccinated, why can't they go in? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, a minister needs to do something about that.
And while the measures are said to be temporary, there's no word on how long they will last. Straight ahead, from bad to worse in Quebec, the measure is set to take effect on New Year's Eve as Omicron grips the province with infection highs never before seen anywhere in Canada. But first, we turn to the forecast here at home. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. How are things outside?
Well, we're still trending on the milder side today, Nathan. We are looking at temperatures continuing that way as we get at least into the next 36 to 48 hours. And then there is a change. We'll talk about that coming up. But right now, it's just a mainly cloudy situation in the GTA. We do have some snowfall that's affecting eastern Ontario, a little bit more rainfall or a mix of precipitation right on the shores of Lake Ontario around Prince Edward County. But through the overnight period, we are looking at retaining those cloudier conditions. Winds will be light. There is the risk of seeing some freezing drizzle overnight and also some fog. Right now, temperatures like this close to the zero mark or just at with relatively low wind chill. We are at 3 degrees at the islands, one at Pearson Airport. Overnight, 0 degrees with the risk of some fog and freezing drizzle. I'll tell you what else you can expect coming up. Back to you, Nathan.
All right, thanks, Michelle. We're learning more about a far-reaching cyber attack that hit the city of Toronto earlier this year. It turns out some 35,000 people's information may have been compromised. CTV's John Woodward is live with more. And John, unlike other organizations targeted by online criminals, the city may have gotten lucky.
Nathan, that's right. The city says it's confirming that the so much metadata was stolen, but says it didn't have any of its operations affected and it didn't even receive a ransom note. The Toronto agency that manages civic theaters may have been hit. Same with the Toronto Police, Toronto Hydro, and the mayor's office. Among more than 30 city divisions at risk in a cyber attack in early 2021, according to a report obtained by CTV News through a Freedom of Information request.
The attackers did steal some of that metadata, which is data about data, and they went back in and they purged the logs.
Metadata, including information about roughly 400 people in long-term care, including vaccination information, information about as many as 110 patients in Toronto's paramedic service, and about 3,000 individuals in public health, including COVID test results, and property tax data about 30,000 taxpayers, for a total of about 35,000 individuals. The city pointing to an Eastern European group named Klopp that took advantage of a weakness in a file system called Acelion and saying in the report it can be assessed with high confidence that the compromised data contained within the leaked City of Toronto's Acelion database may soon be revealed on the attacker-managed public forum. That's what happened in Durham Region, with information about the health and schooling of tens of thousands of people posted, as well as a video of an arrest of a man on a Durham bus. But in Toronto, nothing seems to have been posted.
It looks like they failed. The silence is somewhat deafening.
Perhaps because the metadata that was stolen wasn't as sensitive as the records themselves, or because the group had so many other targets, the city has denied paying a ransom or even getting a ransom request, though many others have paid up.
More than 4,000 companies have now had their data stolen and released online by ransomware gangs. So this is far, far from uncommon, as happens very often. And the data is often very sensitive.
With each subsequent $1 million that's being paid into the ransomware ecosystem, this is turning into a real business. And we're looking, again, at billions of dollars in 2022.
The Toronto Transit Commission is in the midst of its own investigation into a ransomware attack that affected some of its systems in October and November, perhaps hoping it can get off as easy as Toronto. The city says it no longer uses the program that was hacked. Ontario's Information and Privacy Commissioner continues to investigate, pointing out that ransomware attacks have gone up by 151% last year. And last year, Toronto was just one of 39 public agencies to be attacked. Reporting live, I'm John Woodward. Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thank you, John. As temperatures get set to drop, the City of Toronto has opened a new permanent shelter. The building's at 101 Placer Court, not far from the 404 and McNichol in North York. The new shelter is being operated by the Homes First Society. It's a co-ed facility that will also offer support services. The shelter is meant to hold 87 beds, but that count's been reduced to 51 as city officials try to maintain spacing during the pandemic. Omicron continues to have a huge impact right across this country, with record-breaking case numbers in numerous provinces. And as CTV's Chris Inashkate reports, that's prompting more action and more restrictions.
Quebec has once again broke records with more than 14,000 new COVID cases.
I know we're all tired, but it's my responsibility to protect ourselves from this.
In response, starting tomorrow, a curfew will be imposed from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Fines can go up to $6,000 for those who break the curfew. Sporting events closed, restaurants closed, open only for delivery and takeout. Gatherings in homes no longer allowed, and schools will remain closed until January 17th. Following CDC guidelines, Ontario announced it will be cutting its isolation period from 10 to 5 days for those who are vaccinated and asymptomatic. Similar isolation measures are also being introduced in Saskatchewan. 5 days for those who test positive for COVID, are asymptomatic and are fully vaccinated. 10 days for those unvaccinated or not fully vaxxed and are symptomatic.
The metric that we need to watch as we move forward are our hospitalizations or ultimately our ICU numbers.
Saskatchewan, however, is not bringing in stricter gathering limits despite rising cases.
Health officials say because Omicron is highly transmissible, more people will have to reduce their contacts despite being fully vaccinated. Chris Nashkate, CTV News, Ottawa.
Record case counts across Canada are having a growing impact on the country's airlines. WestJet says it's cutting 15% of scheduled flights through to the end of January. The airline says more than 180 employees have tested positive for COVID-19, and it's become a challenge to plan crew levels amid the staffing shortage. WestJet says it will notify affected customers. Both WestJet and Air Canada have also reported delays and cancellations this week caused by extreme cold in western provinces. Airline cancellations are also piling up south of the border, with nearly 1,200 flights called off.
JetBlue, United, and Allegiant Airlines were among the hardest hit. This is just the latest in a series of days with similar issues blamed on weather and staffing issues caused by COVID-19. Industry analysts say most canceled flights will be rebooked and airlines could switch to larger planes to consolidate service. The U.S. set a record for daily infections on Wednesday with 488,000. Health experts are urging Americans to be on guard.
If you go into a bar now, you are very likely to get COVID, whether you're vaccinated or not. If you're unvaccinated and you go into a bar, you will come out of it infected. And look, this is all, everyone needs to make their own risk-benefit analyses.
The U.S. is also seeing an increase in hospitalizations of children under the age of 18 sick with COVID-19. That figure is up 58%. Overall, hospitalizations are lower than previous peaks, but experts are predicting a difficult few weeks as those numbers climb. Overseas, the UK's National Health Service is building new temporary structures to deal with what could be a major surge in new COVID patients.
We're preparing for the worst whilst hoping for the best. It's a no-regrets approach. What you don't want to do is hit a point where you need to treat very large numbers of patients, but you simply don't have the facilities and capacity to do it.
The UK once again broke case records today with over 189,000 new infections. Early data suggests fewer cases are leading to hospitalizations and deaths, but experts say the healthcare system could still be overwhelmed. Advocates have warned of a staffing crisis in the healthcare system as more people experience burnout or test positive. Thousands of Italians lined up for tests today ahead of New Year's celebrations. With public events canceled, many will see family or friends after being unable to last year. Germany's government is urging residents to be cautious this New Year's. Private gatherings are limited to a maximum of 10 guests. And in France, new rules are coming into effect banning concessions at movie theaters, sports venues, and on transit. Israel's received its first shipment of Pfizer's Paxlovid pills, becoming one of the first countries to get the drug. Paxlovid is the first pill approved for the treatment of COVID-19. It can be taken orally at home to ward off the most severe symptoms of the virus. The shipment contains 20,000 doses, with more expected as Pfizer ramps up production. This comes as Israel announces it will offer a fourth dose of COVID-19 vaccine to people with weakened immune systems. A day after Ghislaine Maxwell was convicted of luring girls to be sexually abused by Jeffrey Epstein, one of her accusers spoke out about the verdict with ABC News on Good Morning America.
I wasn't sure that this day would ever come, and I just feel so grateful that the jury believed us and sent a strong message that perpetrators of sexual abuse and exploitation will be held accountable no matter how much power and privilege that they have.
Maxwell was a longtime associate of Jeffrey Epstein. She was found guilty on five of the six counts she faced relating to sex trafficking. The 60-year-old could face decades in prison upon sentencing. Maxwell says she plans to appeal, and her family says they believe she will be vindicated. The presidents of the United States and Russia held their second phone conversation this month amid tensions along the Ukrainian border. The White House released this photo of U.S. President Joe Biden during the conversation. He spoke with Vladimir Putin for nearly an hour at the Russian president's request. Biden said the U.S. and allies would respond decisively if Russia invades Ukraine, as its troops' numbers climb in the area. Russia has denied that and said it would be a colossal mistake if the U.S. were to move forward with economic sanctions, but said talks will continue. The late Archbishop Desmond Tutu's body has arrived in St. George's Cathedral in Cape Town, South Africa. Mourners paid respect to the Nobel Prize winner who died Sunday at the age of 90. The Archbishop is lying in state at the cathedral through tomorrow before a funeral service Saturday. Tutu was one of the world's leading voices against South Africa's apartheid system. His death has prompted an outpouring of tributes from around the world. New York's mayor says the city will ring in 2022 in Times Square as planned, despite record numbers of COVID-19 cases. While some cities have canceled celebrations, officials say New York's high vaccination rate makes it feasible to welcome smaller, masked crowds to watch the ball drop at midnight. Las Vegas is going full steam ahead with its New Year's plans. More than 300,000 visitors are expected to celebrate in that city. As officials advise mask wearing indoors and urge anyone who's feeling sick to stay home. Governor General Mary Simon is sharing her New Year's message, expressing hope as Canada heads into 2022.
Together, we are combating the COVID-19 pandemic with vaccinations and public health measures. Together, we are thinking of creative and innovative solutions to save our planet. Together, we are walking the path of reconciliation on a lifelong journey of healing, respect, and understanding.
Part of Simon's New Year's address is delivered in Inuktitut, her native language. She also references an Inuit concept of not only committing to something, but putting that commitment into action. The Governor General's message also features her husband, Whit Fraser, and their yellow lab, Neva. Still ahead in this digital age where posts and messages are instant, there's still power in the written word that arrives by mail. Pen pals reunited years later thanks to some modern technology. Stay with us for that story.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, we know that many celebrations have been scaled back this year due to the pandemic, but some people will still be enjoying a glass of wine. When it comes to buying wine, is there much of a difference if it comes in a bottle or a box? I'll have my reports. That's just ahead.
Trending on the milder side for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Tomorrow we'll have periods of drizzle, but not a lot of rain and a high of 6 degrees. Mild overnight into New Year's Day. We ring in 2022 with a chance of showers and a high of 4. But then the temperatures drop sharply into Sunday. We'll have periods of snow and a high of just -3. Very cold for Monday morning. We'll talk about that coming up. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Many holiday parties have been scaled back because of the pandemic, but that doesn't mean people won't be enjoying a glass of wine to usher in the new year. There's been a concern supply chain issues have caused a shortage of bottles, and now more wineries are selling boxed wine. Is there a difference? Here's Pat Foran with Consumer Alert.
In the past, boxed wines may have gotten a bad rap, but now more of them are showing up on store shelves. If you're having a gathering, they can be cheaper to purchase. We look at some of the pros and cons of the bottle versus the box.
If you enjoy a glass of wine, you can pour it from the box or the bottle. And now when you visit the LCBO, you'll see more boxed wines on the shelf. Those in the wine business say there is no reason to think less of a wine if it comes from a box.
I'm not a wine snob.
Wine shop owner Cindy Coker says boxed wine has its advantages.
It's delicious, it's convenient, and it has a handle.
Boxed wine can be about half as expensive as wine in a bottle, which makes it a smart choice for parties.
Consumer Reports recently evaluated boxed wines in taste tests.
So we looked for how rich and fragrant the wine was before tasting. Then we wrote down any flavors we noticed, as well as how balanced the wine was, how complex it was.
Many of the boxed wines tested were given positive reviews, and testers also felt it came down to individual tastes. When it comes to boxed wine pros, it's often cheaper to purchase, easy to transport and store. Boxes are environmentally friendly, and once opened, boxed wine can last 4 to 6 weeks. But some of the cons of boxed wines, it doesn't age, there is less selection, it can have expiry dates and won't fit in a wine fridge. It may not be for everyone, but for some, it could be a good option.
I drink boxed wine, and I do recommend it to other people.
Some experts say it's more accurate to call boxed wines a bag in a box because as wine comes out, no air is allowed inside, which keeps it fresher. If you buy wine in Tetra Paks, they're similar to bottles, as air will be allowed inside, which is why the wine should be consumed within days of being opened. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
If you think scraping ice off your car windows this winter is tough, check out the owners of some frozen vehicles in Russia. This was the scene after a cargo ship encased in ice arrived in Vladivostok. This week, the vessel was carrying cars from South Korea when it was hit by strong wind and waves that soon covered all the vehicles and froze. The temperature in the region around that time was minus 43 degrees Celsius. All right, makes us thankful about the forecast here, Michelle.
Absolutely, because we are definitely trending milder. And even though, Nathan, we do have some colder weather to look ahead to in the seven-day forecast, it will definitely not be minus 43. So that is the good news. Weather is brought to you by Train, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So yes, we're quite mild today. Normally this time of the year we should be hitting around minus one is the high. We got to 3 degrees downtown and we were hovering closer to two at Pearson Airport, where we're currently sitting at 1 degree. And wind chill has not really been too much of a factor today, and that's very good news. Off to the north and the west of us, much colder pool of Arctic air, and our neighbors in the Prairie Provinces in BC have been dealing with bitterly cold, extreme cold weather alerts and wind chills. So that is not what we're looking at, but we will cool down, as I mentioned, in the 7 day, but mild overnight at 0 degrees. The biggest thing you have to worry about in the overnight period is the potential for some freezing drizzle and fog. So if you're out on the roads overnight or early in the morning, be aware roads could be slick and visibility could be poor at times. But winds will be light. We won't have much of a wind chill. Sunrise tomorrow at 7:51 a.m. and it'll feel like around 1 degree at that time, going up to a high of 6 degrees in the city of Toronto, 10 degrees in Niagara Falls, 8 in Hamilton. So this is, again, it's almost about a bit of a deja vu from last weekend, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, where we were well above seasonal, getting the risk of seeing some drizzle. If you're in eastern Ontario over towards the Ottawa Valley, this is going to be more translating into snow for you. And we have seen that snowfall extending through the Muskoka region, Bancroft, the Kawarthas, over towards Prince Edward County at times. And even, although in the county, you're probably seeing a bit of a mix of precipitation. So we're in the warmer sector of this low as it continues to go through, and we will cool down once the cold front passes through. So we've got that warmer flow of air from the south, and that's going to bring us some rainfall as we get into the next little while. So just pausing this early in the morning, we see three things here on the radar. We see a little bit of snow, the potential for some mixed precipitation and or freezing drizzle, and some rain there. Snow to the north and the potential for mixed precipitation or showers to the Bruce Peninsula. Another round of this as we get later in the afternoon and into the evening. But again, this is not a lot of rain. This is under 1 millimeter. And then in the overnight period, we get a little bit more shower activity, ringing that in 2022 with that. And then Saturday night into Sunday is when the snowfall arrives. And this will stay with us through the day. It's about 5 to 10 centimeters potentially at this point, depending on where you are in southern Ontario. But again, mild tomorrow with showers at 6, mild through the overnight. If you're out and about at all, you're going to be encountering those milder than normal temperatures. Saturday, 4 degrees and then dropping to minus 6. Watch out Monday morning after we get very cold Sunday night. It's going to feel closer to about minus 18 when you wake up. Back to you, Nathan.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks. People come in and out of our lives, and if we're lucky, important ones stay for a long time. But sometimes that connection is brief. Decades ago, one young Manitoba girl made a friend halfway around the world. They exchanged letters for months, then years went by without a single word. Well, that girl's now grown up, and as CTV's John Hendricks tells us, she's managed to find and reconnect with that friend.
For Canadian soldiers serving overseas, receiving a letter written by someone in your home country is a welcome treat.
But we always got letters from ladies and, like, you know, grandmothers in Newfoundland. They're such nice people, I suppose, is the reason.
Retired Naval Officer Paul Francoeur, who served in Bosnia, says he would also occasionally get letters written by children. He would often write back, and that was usually the end of the correspondence.
Didn't always get a response because very often it's like a school project.
But one 11-year-old letter writer from Manitoba did write back.
I don't know. He had a lot to say. He was really entertaining in his writing. And it got me really, really, really excited to continue to converse and write back.
I have nephews and nieces who would have been that age, and they're all sick of my stupid jokes, so a new audience to laugh at my nonsense was most welcome.
The jokes and other messages would be traded between the two for about half a year.
He was always sending me little gizmos and gadgets based on where he was. And so it always made me excited to see what I was getting next and where he was.
Then after 9/11, he was deployed to the Middle East and the letters stopped.
You lose track, and that's, you know, a bit of a shame.
20 years passed by, and then, as fate would have it, Raylan McIntosh stumbled across one of Paul's letters as she looked through a box in her basement. She thought it would be nice to look up her old pen pal. There was only one small problem. Despite her detective work on Google,
I never ended up finding him.
That's when she decided to go to the internet for help. And a short time later, it delivered.
It wasn't even 24 hours later that I found him.
Then they picked right up where they left off. And now, thanks to Zoom...
Oh, there she is.
Hi.
Oh, we're meeting for the first time. How are you?
Good. How are you?
A face-to-face meeting at last. But just because technology has changed, that doesn't mean the letter writing is over. In fact, they've already exchanged some.
She's told me about her family, and I've seen pictures of her kids, and she's seen pictures of my family, and we kind of have a little bit of insight into each other's lives.
A connection renewed decades later, and this time they plan to keep the letters coming. John Hendricks, CTV News, Winnipeg.
Coming up, Jada Pinkett Smith opens up about her hair loss, her journey with alopecia, and her pledge to embrace baldness to help others do the same. That's after the break. It's an autoimmune disease that can affect anyone at any age, often in life-altering ways. Across Canada, thousands of people live with alopecia. The condition can be uncomfortable to talk about. But that's exactly what a major Hollywood star is doing, sharing her own experience. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
Just all of a sudden one day, look at this line right here.
Jada Pinkett Smith recently posted on Instagram how she discovered she had alopecia. But the Matrix Resurrection star promised to embrace the hair loss condition.
You know, mama's gonna put some rhinestones in there. I'm just gonna make me a little crown.
I've learned to live with the condition, but I would be lying if I said that it was an easy process.
22-year-old Anthony Gilding has had alopecia since 2014 when his dad was cutting his hair and noticed a bald spot. It was diagnosed as alopecia areata, an autoimmune condition.
Our immune systems, for reasons that we still don't understand, are wrongfully attacking our hair follicles as if they're not supposed to be there.
There is no cure, but corticosteroids are often used as a treatment.
That can be delivered through a cream. You can get it done by injection directly into the area of hair loss, or you can take it by pill, which is less common.
Gilding tried several medications, but nothing really helped for long enough. But in some people, the condition can just fade away. More often, though, Gilding says, it goes in cycles. Some factors that can trigger alopecia include genetics, hormones, viral infections like COVID-19, or stress. And he says seeing celebrities shave their heads or talk about alopecia openly helps to overcome the social stigma many patients face.
It's very refreshing to see bald not being displayed as taboo, but just being something that people have.
The Canadian Alopecia Areata Foundation offers support, education, mentors, and even wig lending to help patients and families. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Dolly Parton's received a lot of praise for helping fund research into the Moderna vaccine. Now she's weighing in on some of the responses to the shot.
Circle of love.
The singer spoke with web publication Mick on a range of topics. Parton was asked if she had a message for people who don't want to get vaccinated against COVID-19. She replied that she doesn't like getting into controversy, but was surprised at how many people chose not to get vaccinated. Parton also urged everyone to mask up and social distance. Dwayne Johnson is rejecting a plea from Vin Diesel to join the cast of the final movie in the Fast and Furious franchise.
You know, real was my last job.
I know you didn't do it.
Johnson has appeared in several films in the series, but tensions with Diesel have been high for years, and he left the regular cast. In November, Vin Diesel posted on Instagram calling on Johnson to return. Johnson told CNN yesterday that he was surprised by the post and accused Vin Diesel of trying to manipulate him. Diesel hasn't commented. It's remembered as one of the key moments of the Princess Diana funeral in 1997. And now new documents show that Elton John's performance was close to not happening at all.
The candles burned out long before. Your legend ever will.
Documents from the UK National Archives show organizers weren't sure if John's performance of Candle in the Wind would be too sentimental. In the end, the Dean of Westminster weighed in and said letting John perform would be an imaginative and generous gesture to the public. Ryan Reynolds is weighing in after Betty White accused him of having a crush on her. Reynolds and White both starred in 2009's The Proposal as White gets ready to turn 100 years old. She's appearing on the cover of People magazine. Now, she brought up her ongoing joke that Reynolds is in love with her. Reynolds responded today with his own joke, writing on Twitter, "I'm absolutely sick of the media exploiting past relationships just to drive clicks."
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
Thank you.
To regift or to return, which side do you land on? After all the Christmas presents have been opened, the thank yous have been said, but do you really like what you received? What do you do next? That story in a few minutes.
The isolation can end after 5 days if symptoms are resolved or improving.
Updating our top stories, the province is cutting the required COVID isolation period for most people as Ontario sets another daily record for cases. Starting tomorrow, PCR testing will be limited to key high-risk groups, and large public venues will see reduced capacity limits. Long-term care residents will be offered a fourth dose of vaccine.
2 days is 2 days. We've been dealing with uncertainty for 2 years.
The province is pushing back the end of winter break by 2 days as concern grows over the potential of COVID-19 spreading in the classroom. Officials say the extra time will allow more air filters to be put in place and masks to be distributed. Critics say the Ford government should have acted sooner, and 2 days won't make much of a difference.
I'm also announcing a curfew from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.
And strict new measures are coming into effect in Quebec as that province breaks records with more than 14,000 new cases. On top of the curfew, private gatherings are prohibited, restaurants are going takeout only, and sporting events are canceled. Schools are closed until January 17th. And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 30 basis points to 78.45 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 43 cents a barrel to close at 76.99. And the TSX Composite Index lost 50 points to close at 21,294. Canada Pension Plan premiums will increase more than expected next year thanks to the effects of the pandemic on the labor market. With fewer lower-paying jobs filled, the equation to figure out plan contributions is based on higher salaries. Long story short, that means the amount of pay subject to pension withdrawal is going up 5.3%, faster than it has in three decades. The federal Conservatives called for Ottawa to delay the 2022 bump, but doing so would require the approval of Parliament and seven provincial governments. Canada's national women's soccer team has been named the Canadian Press Team of the Year. The national team captured gold at the Tokyo Summer Games in August when Julia Grosso's goal in penalties lifted Canada to a dramatic shootout victory against Sweden. The team won the same honor at the end of 2012, and this time around, the women grabbed 38 out of 44 votes cast for Team of the Year. Canada's Olympic women's swim team finished second, and the women's national hockey team came in third.
Tonight, we're tracking rapidly changing developments in Canada's COVID fight.
It's overwhelming.
Expanded restrictions, but shrinking quarantines as Omicron infections shatter new records. Later on CTV National News.
Finally tonight, now that the season of giving is over, 'tis the season to return and regift. We all know it's the thought that counts, but what is your plan for some of those particular presents? CTV's Jordan Cunningham reports.
Another COVID Christmas has come and gone, and some of us out there would like a refund on this entire Christmas season.
Spending Christmas by myself is a gift that I
would definitely say thanks, but no thanks.
If you spend it with someone you love, you're lucky. Presents, even luckier. But even the luckiest of us have that one present destined for refund or re-gift.
I did re-gift something, though. Yeah, like a soap set.
Yeah.
Lotions and stuff.
Just a pair of socks, actually. I did very well.
No chance I'm re-gifting my Christmas socks. They're perfect, just like the person that gave them to me. Santa brought my daughter Reese a magic 8-ball. That's not going back either. But there's no shame in re-gifting, especially when you're Jen.
If I can, I try to give out some packages to people on the street that don't have anything.
The packages under her arm were made with love by her mom, Kelly.
Yeah, my mom passed away in September, so we have knitted blankets, scarves, hats, and all these beautiful things that we don't need.
Thank you.
The best re-gift you can give. And it inspired me to give, or at least to lend.
Oh my God, thank you.
Well, I'm not giving it to you, but you can use it.
Oh, okay.
Shane asks a question for the greater good.
We gonna bind together as a society? My sources say no. No!
But maybe we'll see breakthroughs in technology.
Don't count on it.
All of us want a better year ahead. And while there are positive signs, what we get from 2022 will probably be what we give. Jordan Cunningham, CTV News.
Cue. Whatever Mother Nature gives us, we cannot re-gift that.
That's right. There's nothing we can do about it. But you know what? I'm pretty happy with this milder weather that we're having today into tomorrow. Overnight tonight, a low of 0 degrees, which is well above where we should be at this time of the year. And looking at satellite radar, not much in the GTA now. Just a few clouds. We could see some freezing drizzle and some fog overnight, though. Showers are on the way as we head into tomorrow. Taking a look at what we're expecting, a high of 6 degrees. And then showers to ring in 2022 with a high of 4. But the temperature drops sharply. Police Saturday night into Sunday, and we have snow to deal with starting overnight. High of just -3 that day. It's going to feel close to around -17, -18 when you wake up on Monday morning. So keep that in mind. But then we head back above seasonal again. Back to you, Nathan.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join Raheem Ladani later tonight for CTV News at 11:30. You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, you can watch breaking news all day long on CP24. For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.